g'day everybody, and welcome back to the next episode of the Mastering Risk Management podcast. I'm Anthony Wilson, and today's guest is Grant Cura. So Grant's bio, I'll just go through that firstly before we say hello. So Grant is currently the Director of Risk Management for the University of New South Wales. He's been an audit and risk professional for the past 20 years, primarily within the financial service industry, both in Australia and in the UK. He started his career as a cadet at KPMG, and after qualifying as a chartered accountant, moved to a variety of risk management roles in banks including Westpac, Credit Suisse and Lloyds TSB. His most recent position before moving to UNSW saw him heading up operational risk for the institutional bank at Westpac, a role which involved a maturing of risk and compliance across the first line of defence. Grant is currently responsible for risk management and business continuity at University of New South Wales. The risk role is relatively new, being split from audit in early 2016, recognising the importance risk management needed to play in partnering with the executive to deliver UNSW's ambitious 2025 strategy. So, welcome Grant.
Thanks very much, Anthony.
So that's a great background, lots of risk and assurance in all of that.
Definitely.
And I'm sure you're applying all of that background into the new role here at UNSW.
Yes, indeed. So, definitely.
Maybe before we launch into UNSW itself, just how you got into this whole risk management profession.
Sure.
What dragged you in?
I guess you almost, a lot of people will say you almost fall into risk management. It's not a specific career path you choose when you leave school or university. So, I mean, as you mentioned in the bio, I started career as an undergraduate at KPMG, which I think is a fantastic training ground to start as a chartered accountant. You get a really great understanding of how businesses work. And I guess, you know, auditors have moved away from the traditional focus on just financial processes to get a much broader understanding of how businesses operate.
Yeah.
So I remember at KPMG, when I was there in the late 90s, we were moving towards this wonderful thing called Audit 2000, and it was, it sounds incredible to say it now, it's such a long time ago.
Yeah.
But it was a change in audit approach where you would go and speak to the marketing people and the sales people and, you know, a variety of other executives across the organisation to understand what was happening. And that was great because that gives you a better appreciation as to what's happening in the numbers.
Yeah.
But in doing that, you are looking at risk management practices and approaches. So
yeah.
I see audit and risk these days as very, very similar and very aligned in terms of its focus on risk management.
Yes. Yeah, and the listeners will hear or will have heard the interview I did with Andrew Wern at Coca-Cola Amatil. And Andrew's got quite a combined risk and audit function. You know, there's no difference really between the two, and it depends on what role they're playing on the day almost. So, yeah. I agree. There's a lot of convergence,
exactly,
I suppose, between the second and the third.
And I mean, so there's a lot of, from an audit perspective as well, there's a lot of work around looking at Sarbanes-Oxley and from a compliance perspective, certainly within financial institutions where I worked. And so I guess risk management was more of a natural progression. So I've had a lot of audit roles and a lot of risk roles previously. But when I was at Westpac, I was in audit for about 4 years. And then again, it just felt like a natural progression. And with a desire to want to move closer to the business. So audit are very independent, which they need to be.
Yes.
And it's very much a case of, and from an assurance perspective, yes, this is working, or no, this isn't, and we need to do something about it. Whereas from a risk perspective, I actually see my role here as split into two parts. So there's a partnering with the business. So if there are risks that I feel like we're not managing properly, let's what can I do to assist in that process?
Yep.
But at the same time, risk is still an independent function.
Yep.
And so in calling out where we aren't managing a risk properly, it's like, okay, to the executive, come on, we need to do something about this.
Yes.
What are your actions? When are you going to do a buy and so on? So it's I guess it's that moving closer to the business element, which is what I like, and that natural progression towards moving into a risk management role.
Oh, that's great. And just before I let you escape the financial services industry, so you had a lot of time in banking, and And I guess, you know, there's an industry where risk management's not an option. Mm-hmm. You know, it's APRA and all these other institutions that force it on the financial services industry. How did you get over the challenge of people thinking, well, I'm only doing this to tick a box and to keep regulators happy? How did you employ techniques to sort of engage people on the journey, you know, rather than have it forced down their throat?
I guess it's like any approach to risk in how you deal with the business. It's showing what the value add is.
Yes.
And so the contrast from a banking perspective, as you rightly point out, where risk is a given, it has to happen.
Yep.
Coming to a university where the risk maturity is quite low, not to say that we don't think about risk, but there wasn't a sort of formal framework or a fundamental mindset that says risk needs to be one of my top considerations.
Yep.
I mean, at a bank, it's all about, again, just showing that value add. So you say, we're going to try and improve a process because we have a control gap, and this is the exposure that we've got. And so linking it to the strategy of the business.
Yep.
So, for example, if you might say there's a control gap in financial markets, say in FX, and we're exposed, and you know that control deficiency could lead us to losing money, well, straight away you're going to get the attention of the executive from that perspective. So I really think it's about understanding what their strategy is, what they're interested in, and trying to show that value add.
Yep. Yeah, as soon as you can tie it to objectives, you usually got an audience.
Definitely.
Yeah, and it is, I guess, in the non-financial space, you find various levels of maturity, don't you, with, you know, how is risk managed sort of intrinsically, or is it you know, something that sort of people just do and they don't even realise they're doing it? But sometimes there is that lack of a formal sort of program or some structure around it. So the big move into universities, and when we first caught up, we were talking about some of the unique challenges. So maybe a bit of the UNSW background.
So I mean, look, it's quite a shift, I think. So having spent so long in banking and financial services, where, as you mentioned previously, risk is just a given, and then coming to an organisation where the remit is very much around maturing our approach to risk management. It's really interesting. So here at UNSW, we've got quite an ambitious strategy. We're going to spend $3 billion over 10 years. We call it UNSW 2025.
Yeah.
And it's all about improving our rankings.
Yes.
And we do that on a number of fronts. We're spending approximately $2 billion of that $3 billion in research and looking to gain some really top quality world-class researchers to get them on board.
Yep.
But it's also looking at a different approach to education, different delivery models, and then being a university, we also have, you know, altruistic agendas as well. So from a social and a global perspective, you know, one of our vice chancellor talks about one of the things that we do at university is we improve people's lives, and it's so true. It's amazing to work for an organization where at its core we are trying to improve people's lives. You know, we do research into cancer. We do research into water technology. We do research into solar power. And so some really fundamental issues for humanity, we are doing research into that. Yeah. So it's wonderful.
Yeah.
And then you're trying to apply a risk lens to that. The possibilities are endless.
Yes.
You know, we have joint ventures with Chinese companies to look at improvements in cabling technology. So the technology can reduce the power, the energy lost by 5%. And if you think about commercializing that and the impact that can have, it's huge.
Yes.
We have a joint venture with King's College in London and Arizona State University in the US, and it's called the Plus Alliance. And so again, it's got a research and a teaching focus. And then, you know, even things to the standard university risks around academic quality and standards, and then you think about student misconduct and cheating and, you know, the whole turn it in and you know, essay mills and so on.
Yes.
So it's moving from a bank to the university, it's just the possibilities from a risk perspective are almost limitless, which is fantastic from my own perspective in terms of my hunger to learn new things.
Yep.
But it's also quite challenging as well, because things can just come from anywhere.
Yes.
And being a relatively new risk function, it can be challenging to get across everything.
Yeah. Yeah, and I gather, I mean, like every organisation, there's strategic, there's external, there's operating risk, but I, and you know, every company's going to have different strategic type risks, and every company's going to have different external risk, and obviously they're going to have different operational. But when I think about operational in the university context, my goodness, you've got people doing quantum computing at one end of the campus, and you know, civil engineers blowing things up probably at the other end.
Yeah, and you know, radioactive waste
yes.
in one part of the campus, and
yeah.
you know, experiments where people yeah. blow things up.
Yeah, yeah,
definitely. So it's really from a work health safety perspective,
yeah.
it's quite interesting too.
Yeah.
And it's also interesting from a business continuity perspective too. So you think, you know, banks are intrinsically at the moment, they're technology companies that provide, you know, financial products. So their business continuity approach is, it's all about technology, and it's all about the data centers and the, you know, the ATM network and what could go wrong.
Yes.
Business continuity out here is a whole different ball game.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, it's what happens in one of the, if we lose a building which has got office space and lecture theatres and research activity, it can be quite challenging to actually sort of understand all the activity that goes on,
yeah.
what's critical and what's not, and then how we recover from that. So
it's
just a really, really diverse environment compared to a bank, which is great. It's challenging.
Absolutely. And I guess things like a bank's a distributed network, and you know, branches everywhere, and if you lose a branch, God help us, but you know, you lose a branch, you lose a branch, sort of thing. This is a very concentrated, you know, group here at this campus, and I know it's not the only campus, but you know, you've got a, I don't know how many people would be on site at any particular point in time, but you know, you think of the flu that's going around this year, worst case ever, you know, back in the pandemic days, and you know, swine flu,
yes.
and goodness knows what else. You know, you've got that sort of exposure here as well, I guess, versus, you know, some of the, like a technology company, like a bank nowadays. So yeah, the list of risks must be quite.
I mean, we're like a regional city.
Yeah.
In effect, you know, like the size of like Dubbo, for
yeah.
example. You know,
yeah.
we'd have, you know, thousands of staff. You know,
yeah.
tens of thousands of students.
Yeah.
On a large campus space. Reasonably close to the CBD, so
yes.
it's it presents its unique challenges. That's
yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, and tell me, I guess in every organisation there's various levels of degrees of acceptance of the risk function and engagement with the risk function, and I imagine it's no different in the university environment. And there's probably, I gather, sort of an administrative staff, and you know, those people that are probably used to more of that regulatory type thing and
sure.
compliance type activities. And then you've got the teaching staff and the academics, and I'm making an assumption here that it might be a little bit more challenging to engage with the academics. Is that right or not?
I've been pleasantly surprised.
Oh, really?
I think it's come down to the approach that I've taken.
Good.
So when I started, I certainly didn't walk in and try and drop a financial services or a banking risk management
sure.
approach here.
Sure.
Because that's just not going to work, and
yep.
you're not going to get people on side from the get-go.
Yep.
So I think in taking an interest in the strategy and what's happening at the university really puts risk on a good footing. So walking in and saying, what is it that you guys are trying to achieve over the next 12 to 18 months?
Yep.
And then what can stop you achieving that?
Yes.
Is a much better conversation, and you get much better buy-in
yep.
instead of walking into a dean and saying, okay, here's my template for the risk profile for
yeah.
the business school. Let's start filling it in,
going line by line. Yeah, yeah.
And look, if you think about it, so we have nine faculties. All of the deans are running significant businesses in their own right.
Yeah.
Universities these days are very, you know, commercial organisations.
Yeah.
You know, we have a turnover of $2 billion annually.
Wow.
So when you think about that, And you think that the deans are running significant businesses.
They're CEOs of their own business, yep.
They are.
Yep.
And so risk management inherently needs to be something that they are concerned about.
Yes.
So the acceptance certainly from that level
yes.
has been fantastic.
Good.
And, you know, the other opportunity is, you know, getting a couple of layers down and actually going out and speaking to researchers or speaking to the teaching staff as well, they are equally as accommodating.
Fantastic.
So, you know, we have researchers where, as I alluded to earlier, where we're doing We've got joint ventures with Chinese entities. And so, you know, the researchers are acutely aware of the risks in not only the research activity, but also the business side of things as well.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I would have made a very similar assumption to you before I started, but I've been very pleasantly surprised.
Oh, that's good. Yeah. That's good. It was interesting. I heard on the radio this morning, actually, about a $100 million new venture with Chinese government that UNSW has just entered into. Similarly, one of the universities in Melbourne's just entered into an $80 million venture. And I think, you know, the discussion was around, you know, the usual, oh, they're going to take all our IP and those sort of things. But, you know, I think this is a time to, you know, explore and expand. And it was really nice to hear about the 2025 strategy and the investment in research, because I think that's really important.
Look, I mean, it's interesting times at the moment. So there's no secret that there's a growing reliance on China, not only from an international student perspective, but also in terms of the ability to expand and fund a lot of the research activity that universities undertake.
Yes.
And it's from a risk management perspective, it's actually a really interesting, I'm not going to call it dilemma, but it's an interesting topic, because you're right, you know, there's all this, a bit of scaremongering around, oh, what happens if, you know, the Chinese take the IP, or, you know, if we're doing research which has got defence
ramifications,
then you think about, well, you know, is this something we would want to be getting into?
Yeah.
The flip side of that is, though, that a lot of the research that we do in cooperation and it's being funded goes back to the core of what we're trying to do as a university to improve people's lives, you know? You know, environmental sustainability. I mean, it's fantastic that we have an opportunity to expand the research work that we're doing, which is going to have a great outcome.
Yeah. It was interesting, the conversation on the radio went more along the lines of who is going to get to commercialise it. You know, if the university works with the Chinese businesses and they come up with a great commercial idea, well, who gets to make it? So is it going to be made in Australia or made in China? Now, you know, I think, you know, they're hoping that good things will come for both partners out of that. So, you know, I think that's a good thing.
I mean, so this is a little bit of a shift compared to sort of the more traditional activity that we've done as a university over the last few years.
Yes.
And certainly we do have a big push and a big agenda working with Chinese entities.
Yeah.
From my perspective, from a risk perspective, I want us to be going into any of these sort of transactions with our eyes wide open.
Yes.
So let's do proper due diligence.
Yep.
Let's understand who we're dealing with. And then, to your point around the IP as well, let's understand what all the arrangements are, so that you know, we're just going into these transactions with our eyes wide open, understanding what the risks are.
No, that's good. And I guess within your job there are some challenging things that you have to do, and we've heard some of them, and there's some that really, you know, make you jump out of bed of a morning and go, great, here I am again. Tell us about those. What are the extremes that you're sort of confronted with in the role?
So look, one of the big things that we're working on at the moment, I mentioned before, we're part of the Plus Alliance.
Yes.
And again, that's an alliance between UNSW Sydney, King's College in London, and Arizona State University. So we're looking to build an engineering school in London,
right?
And it's going to be different because it's going to have an offering that, combined from those three universities, is better than what just one university could provide.
Sure.
And there's a focus on gender equity in terms of the students that we're getting through that and so on. So when you think about, from a risk perspective, you go, okay, well, the UNSW University, the engineering faculty is very well regarded internationally.
Yes.
What is this going to do from a brand and a reputation perspective?
Yep.
And then you think about the academic side of things in terms of how we're going to ensure we've got quality programs in there, and then even just the prospect of finding the right location, building a building. You know, universities are a massive enterprise from a building perspective.
Yes.
You know, there's hundreds of millions of dollars worth of, you know, bricks and mortar around campus, and so you think about, we are focused in Randwick, but then now we're looking to do something on the other side of the world.
Yes.
And it's interesting. So, you know, the director of the Plus Alliance has come to me, and he's really keen to understand how they can better manage the risks and also look at what the risk appetite might be for that organisation. So it's really interesting where We've just finalised a risk appetite statement for the university here.
Okay.
And so how that is going to relate to the risks that the Plus Alliance will take, it's fascinating.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, even things like other MOUs that we enter into with other universities, and what does that mean?
Yeah.
Like, there's some really interesting things that we're doing out here. I think if it was 5 years ago and there wasn't this ambitious strategy and we weren't doing all of these interesting things, this role wouldn't have appealed to me.
Yes.
Because it would have just been a stock standard, you know, academic quality, research quality, conduct and so on.
Yeah.
Which doesn't have the appeal compared to all of the really interesting things that we're doing.
Yeah. And I think, and we mentioned it in your bio at the intro, but the fact that there is now this big strategy seems to have been recognised by the executive team. They've split risk and audit. I think, you know, they understand if you're going to achieve this ambitious strategy, you're going to need to think about the risk elements along the way, and not just the negative things, but the opportunity things that a good risk function brings along with it.
Certainly, and so we've recognised the need for a massive uplift in our project management capability as well.
Yes.
So when you're spending that amount of money, it's really important to have good governance and good controls around how that money
Absolutely.
Is spent and being able to track where we are. So certainly project management is getting a much more significant focus than it has previously.
Yep.
And obviously intrinsic in that is, you know, what are the risks in what we're doing and how can we appropriately manage those?
Yeah. Oh, that's good. And in terms of how risk comes to life in each of the 9 faculties, because I can imagine you haven't got 45 people wandering around in the risk department.
No.
Most risk departments I know are fairly slim and lean.
Yeah.
But how does it sort of come to life? Is there the concept of, say, risk champions, or is there a risk contact in each faculty?
Definitely risk champions. So the way that we're set up in the faculties is we have faculty executive directors.
Yes.
And effectively they are like the business manager for the dean, but they are the workhorse
yep.
of, from a professional perspective,
yep.
of the faculty. And so I've got great relationships with all of those executive directors,
yes.
which is so important in terms of wanting to drive a risk agenda.
Yep.
You know, they understand, and again, they understand what the faculty is trying to achieve, and then they recognise what can stop them doing that,
yep.
and how that translates into a risk profile.
Right.
And so using those guys as champions has been invaluable in terms of pushing a risk agenda across the university.
Yeah, that's good.
I mean, I'm also fortunate that you know, I've got reporting lines through to the Risk Committee of Council.
Right.
And out here at the university, we have an amazing council in terms of, you know, the top business people across the city.
Yes.
You know, a lot of them are also directors on financial institutions.
Yep.
And so that actually helps, because intrinsically they understand
they
the importance
risk.
Of
yeah.
of risk.
Yes.
But equally, a lot of the council members come from quite a varied and diverse background as well,
yep.
which does bring that range of views and opinions, which is equally as invaluable when it comes to understanding and managing the risks from a university.
Yeah, no, that's great. Mm. That's great. And the risk offering here at UNSW, I think we were saying just before we started talking, the as far as I recall, the only master's degree you can do now is at UNSW. So, I mean, that's a fantastic thing as well.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I think it's, you know, from an academic perspective in terms of the offerings at UNSW, it's great. And it's, you know, great to be a part of an organisation which, you know, does that and really promotes risk management, having that offering.
And in a world, I think, crying out for some sort of standard professional certification for risk managers, you know, it's nice that you can still do a master's in risk management here. As I said, I don't think you can do it anywhere else. I think the other place I looked at before I undertook mine was Stern, New York University.
Wow.
That was a hell of a commute. So that didn't really get a Guernsey.
No, it's interesting though, because risk is always a part of a broader program,
yes,
but never a specific program.
Yes.
So I've recently completed the Australian Institute of Company Directors course,
yes,
where risk and risk appetite is an element of that course, which I think is fantastic.
Yes.
And if you look at an MBA course, then you know obviously there is a there are risk subjects elements. In that.
Yes.
But by having a complete master's degree on risk management, it's fantastic.
Yeah, and I think, you know, and I'm not saying the master's is the only way to go, but I think as a profession, there's an opportunity to get some recognition there. And there's all sorts of different types of recognition, depending on who you talk to, which might be part of the issue with for the profession to try and standardise. And I guess probably that leads to the next question. Mm. So you've been in the profession for a while now. What do you think are the challenges for the profession per se? What does risk need to do to continue to improve? And
I think technology is just going to keep on moving at such a fast pace that from a risk perspective, or from a risk professional's perspective, having an understanding of how technology works and what the risks are is invaluable.
Yes.
So, I mean, the obvious one is cybersecurity.
Yep.
So being able to understand not only how it works at your organisation, but also what data you hold and how exposed you are is invaluable. So being able to go and have a chat with the CIO and understand, you know, the technology language that they're speaking is going to be more and more valuable.
Absolutely.
I think as well, if you think about from a risk professional perspective, taking a taking an interest in the strategy and understanding the culture of the organisation is also invaluable.
Yeah.
So in terms of getting in the door and being and the risk agenda being prominent, I feel like one of the only ways that you can do that is take an interest in what the organisation is trying to achieve and then focus on risks in the strategy rather than more of a checklist or a tick-the-box type approach.
Yeah.
So being able to demonstrate that you're taking an interest and, as you mentioned before, you know, getting to the core of, you know, the objectives of the people in the business and what they're trying to achieve, it's the only way to really, I guess, progress an agenda for risk management and organisation.
Yeah. And what about your view, and interesting, given you've come out of financial, but quantitative models, you know, versus the 5x5 matrix and whether it's red or green or amber or whatever. The challenge, I think, has always been bringing that discipline and that science to some of the operational risks, I suppose. So, what, you know, is there a place where risk management generally has got to still get to yet in that space?
I genuinely believe that it's not a one-size-fits-all approach, and it really does depend on the organisation that you're at. So certainly in a banking context, you know, that quant aspect is very important.
Yep.
Here at the university, I believe that what's appropriate is a really, you know, just a basic fundamental approach to risk management.
Yep.
So interestingly, we're looking at getting a governance, risk and compliance system.
Right.
And in coming up with the specs, in a sense, it was quite straightforward. It's, you know, a lot of the tech companies these days, what comes out of the box, it complies with ISO standards.
Yep.
It's, you know, fundamental risk management. And that's what we need. We don't need bells and whistles. We need something which I can put in front of senior management.
Yes.
And you can say, okay, well, these three or four things are red.
Yes.
What are we going to do about it?
Yeah.
Or these other things are further to the, you know, bottom left of the risk map.
Yeah.
So that's okay.
Yes.
We'll just keep that on watch.
Yeah.
So it's really around making it really simple and easy for the executive to understand.
Yeah. Because there's some things you can measure fairly relatively easily. There's data, there's, you know, all of that sort of stuff. And others are a bit more ethereal, I suppose. And you do have to rely on people's, you know, experience and knowledge and to some degree gut feel to be able to put a metric around it. And absolutely, talking to board and executive, you know, you've got to keep it really simple and straightforward, and here's the so what.
Definitely.
And here's what we're doing about it.
It's interesting you say gut feel. So a lot of the council, or not a lot, some of the council members have said that they want more key risk indicators around the operational risk categories that we've got, and that they feel at the moment that it is a bit more of a gut feel approach to categorising and measuring the risk.
Yeah.
And that's fine. I mean, it's part of the journey that we've got out here to mature our approach to risk management.
Yep.
And I actually think it's good. And again, it comes back to that diversity of background that we've got on our council and on our risk committee in terms of their desire to understand more about the risks.
Yep.
So, you know, I guess KRIs are the next step for us out here, along with implementing a governance, risk and compliance system.
And is... I imagine the university's got data coming out the wazoo, basically.
Yes, yes.
How easy is it for you to get hold of and start to think about KRIs? I mean, you've still got work to do, as you said, but is it, you know, you're in a university, data's easy, or is it all over the place and still pretty challenging?
Oh, look, it is challenging. We're lucky that we do have a university planning and performance division,
right,
which does have a handle on the data that we've got.
Yep.
We've only recently implemented council KPIs, so we've got a scorecard that goes to council every 6 months,
yep,
and there's a number of indicators on there where we do have a central source of the truth on that data.
Right.
But it is a mechanism to measure how we're going with the strategy. And so in coming up with the risk appetite statement, what I've tried to do is make it something tangible, not only for council, but for senior executive out here. So in coming up with that risk appetite statement, where possible, I've actually linked it to an existing council KPI. Okay. So if we think about, you know, from a risk appetite perspective, you know, we would accept a certain level of a certain drop in our academic quality and standards, but it'd be a very small level.
Yes.
And then in terms of measuring our academic quality and standards, we look at student experience, we look at graduate employability, and those are existing indicators that we already measure or we already report to council.
Yes.
So that's another way of, I guess, getting risk entrenched into the mindset of senior executive and council by linking an appetite to indicators and metrics that they're already
seeing. Very comfortable with. And the university's judged on externally in some cases.
Indeed.
As well. Yeah.
Indeed.
Yeah.
So much of it is about university rankings and prestige.
Yes.
So it's really interesting.
Yeah.
You know, and there are quite a few indicators or quite a few companies out there that rank the universities, and, you know, having a great understanding of how that works and what the drivers are is pretty key to moving up those rankings and improving our strategy.
And rankings obviously are important for, you know, attracting students, and that's a key driver. But are they also important for funding? Like, you know, does government funding depend on placing of rankings? Or
I think it would to an extent.
Right.
I mean, a lot of the work that we are doing in terms of partnerships is trying to break that traditional model.
Yeah.
And so if we can show that we are, you know, like this Plus Alliance that I spoke of earlier, by partnering with other institutions, we feel like we have a better chance of not only getting funding, but also accessing new markets for that funding as well.
Yep.
So, you know, if you bring some great minds from across the globe together to solve a problem, I think that by doing that, you're putting yourself at an advantage to get research funding from that perspective. But I've been just so surprised about how much of it is about university rankings.
Yes, well, that's, I guess that's, if that's the bread and butter of the business,
it
I guess
is.
You've got to make sure you're on board with that. So I guess just if you're a young person considering risk management, as you said, back in our days, I suppose, we didn't actually have risk on the radar when we were in year 12 or whatever. young person thinking of a career and has heard about this risk management thing, what are the things you'd talk to them about to make sure that they start off on the right foot and, you know, have some good tips for success? What sort of advice would you give?
So I think, you know, if you're looking at risk management as a career, I think it's fantastic because it puts you really close to the strategy of an organisation.
Yeah.
Intrinsically, risk is so important to achieving the strategy. So I think that it's great because you'll actually get a really good understanding of how businesses operate, what drives them, you know, what are the factors that bring in the revenue, and conversely, you know, what are the threats? So you get a really good understanding of the landscape and the environment that a business is operating in.
Yes.
As I mentioned earlier, I think having a really good understanding of technology is just a must these days.
Yep.
Now we're moving at such a rapid pace that you know, understanding cyber threats or understanding how a technology function should be organised so that you can better manage the technology risks and support, you know, the frontline business is critical.
Yeah.
So I think it's those two things, really understanding technology. So for new risk professionals is just fundamental.
Yeah. And it seems to be that the stream, if there is any such thing as a stream that leads into risk management, is accounting and finance. A lot of the people seem to come out of there or have gone into one of the big four, done some work in that space, and then gone out into a risk-type role. So
I agree. It's, you know, auditing and accounting seem to be quite a quite an easy pathway in, although I note from one of your previous podcasts, you had a lawyer who moved into risk management, which I think is quite interesting, actually. Very interesting. But and look, the accounting and audit professions have moved a long way as well in the last few years too, and really that focus on understanding the business and understanding what drives a business and what the business strategy is, as opposed to, you know, just doing substantive testing on financial statements to make sure that they're true and fair. It's a fundamental shift, but it's so important, and it sets people up to really understand what makes businesses tick.
Yeah, and the talk is always, and you know, in whether it was audit in my last role or whether it was in risk that I did earlier, but it's always about value. You know, what value are you adding? Used to be the question. So, what are the sort of things that you sort of work towards or strive towards to say, hey, listen, you know, we're adding value.
Sure. So I think I may have mentioned earlier, I guess the way I see the risk management role here at the university, there's two aspects to it. So the first one is, I guess, to challenge management where risks aren't being managed appropriately.
Yep.
But the other side is to partner with the business to actually help them manage their risks better.
Yeah.
So I've talked a lot about the new commercial activity that we've got at the moment, so partnerships with other universities or joint ventures with other entities.
Yep.
And you look at, I guess, the quantum computing lab that we have out here, which is, you know, world leading. And, you know, we've got Telstra and state and federal government and CBA involved.
Yeah.
We didn't have a tool which was a one-stop shop to help us assess counterparty risk.
Yes.
I don't know, that sounds a bit like a banking term when you look at the risk dealing with counterparties, but what we've implemented is a tool which helps us understand the sorts of questions we should be asking from a due diligence perspective, and it can cover a broad range of activities. So let's understand who we're dealing with, what the ownership structure is. From a financial perspective, are they actually, is our counterpart going to be able to meet the obligations that they say they will under the contract?
Yep.
Then you look at the IP and who owns that. What data is being generated and where are we actually hosting that, and is it secure or not? Basically, is this the right counterparty to deal with? So from a reputational perspective, are we comfortable to be associated with them?
And that's a really powerful value add, because, you know, it's not just in the case here at the uni of those people that are, say, supporting the quantum computing program. But any sort of outsourced third-party provider that you're using, you can apply the same lens to. So whether that's somebody that's, you know, providing your security services on the campus or whatever, you can apply that same thing.
And exactly. And so in order to get better traction with that as well, there's a strong link with our procurement process as well, so that, you know, once you hit certain thresholds, you need to be, you know, logging onto this counterparty risk tool so that you can understand a little bit better who we're dealing with and what the risks are.
Yeah.
So I see that as a real value add.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that, you know, it demonstrates that I'm not just here to sort of point the finger and say, here's a risk we're not managing properly, what are you guys going to do about it?
Yep.
It's actually sitting down and saying, you know, let's work together on this and how can we improve our approach,
our risk management. Partnership approach rather than,
definitely,
you know, somebody to be a policeman person.
Exactly, exactly.
Fantastic. All right. Well, listen, that's been great. I think the whole university thing is just fascinating in terms of the risks and the opportunities as well. And it's great to see UNSW, you know, really, really pushing the envelope in terms of opportunities and the 2025 strategy.
Definitely.
And it's good to see that they've recognised that risk needs to play a part of that, and that it sounds like they're embracing the efforts that you're doing really well.
Definitely, I agree.
And, you know, like every risk manager, you'll be arguing that, hey, there's a lot more to do. But
there's always more to do.
But it sounds like it's, you know, a great environment for that. So anything else you wanted to add? Anything you wanted to flog from the university? Any courses on special at the moment?
Look, you know, our engineering faculty is fantastic. You know, AGSM, clearly a great place if you're looking for a postgrad MBA. So I'm starting my MBA with AGSM in the coming months. So I'll certainly be an advocate for that product.
Excellent. Well, I can testify that the Masters for Risk Management was very good as well.
Excellent.
And was very challenging. So it was a great course there. Well, listen, Grant, thank you. thank you very much for your time. It's been great for you to share your insights into this, and especially that transition from financial services into, you know, the world of academia. I think that's quite a great journey. I'm sure it's going to keep you entertained for a little while yet.
I certainly hope so.
At least till 2025, by the sounds of it.
Oh, look, it was interesting. You know, you sit in, sometimes I think you sit in a banking bubble. And when this opportunity came up, I just thought, oh, there's no way. Why would I go and work for a university? Yes. It's insane. But then I don't think a lot of people have an appreciation for the size and scale of what goes on at universities. It's a massive enterprise, you know, turning over $2 billion annually. It's an incredibly huge business, and being able to partner with that and, you know, assist in achieving the strategy is fantastic.
I think there must be a bit of a groundswell in the university world for the recognition of risk and the promotion of risk. I know, because headhunters contact me every now and then, there's been three universities that have been looking for, you know, the similar role to your own.
Indeed.
So it sounds like there's some traction and there's some momentum for risk in the university environment, which is fantastic.
Yeah, definitely.
Because, as you say, this is about improving society as well as improving, you know, the institution itself.
So, definitely.
Yeah. Well, fantastic. Thank you, Grant.
No, thank you very much.
And to our listeners, thank you again for tuning in. Hopefully you found today's session informative. I certainly have. And as always, you know, please, if you've got questions that you'd like to be posed to these CROs, these heads of risk, if you'd like particular people you'd like to hear from, please let me know. You can get in contact with me on my mobile, is 0404 829 040, or you can contact me via my website, which is www.proximityriskassurance.com.au. So thanks again for listening, and we will talk to you again at the next episode. Bye for now.